The sixth Salia of Parshas Toldos continues the story of Yaakov and Esav and the Brachos and Yitzchak's first now giving them to Yaakov and Esav discovering what has happened. And the Aliyah begins with the words, "Vayitein lecha ha'elohim mital ha'shamayim u'mishmanei ha'aretz v'rov dagan v'sirosh." So the bracha, which begins the Aliyah, starts with a vav, and that itself is significant, and may be why the Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Brachos tells us that these are the same brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to Avraham Avinu, now being continued on to his descendants. The Torah Tamima suggests that it's this linking, this vav, that shows us that it's the continuation of those same brachos. Rashi has a understanding there that the message is Yitain v'yachzer v'yitain. It's essentially the gift that keeps on giving. And that is indeed very significant. The Vilna Gaon, in his commentary to the Haggadah, in the section of Chad Gadya, writes that all the good things that happen to the Jews are because of these brachos. And this idea that indeed it is the gift that keeps on giving is connected to an explanation that the Kli Yoker gives regarding this vav, this continuity. And he notes that one who thinks about the brachos that God provides to the individual and to the Jewish people as a whole will become overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude and will feel that he has a tremendous debt. However, that debt can be crippling, and one might feel that it's impossible to ever fill this debt and to ever pay back a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and this could lead to a sense of yayish, to one giving up. But if one understands that there's an ongoing benefit that's being provided, so it's similar to a relationship one might have with a store that's providing items on credit. So even if there's a big debt to the store, so you recognize that you have to at least pay a little bit towards the debt, or the store is not going to continue giving you merchandise. So when we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is continuing to provide us with these great blessings, even though we're overwhelmed with what it takes to pay it back, we recognize also that we can't stop, that we have to do as much as we can to continue to try to pay back HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, how can we expect that these brachos will continue to be given to us? And of course, this pasuk is familiar to us, this phrase, V'yitein lecha, because the Zohar tells us that the minig is to recite this on Motzai Shabbos, and the idea being, as Rav Tzadok HaKohen discusses in his Pri Tzadik, that what we do on Shabbos, the meals that we have, and the other activities are holy and represent our participation in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessing and our recognition of that. So too, we want that to continue throughout the week. And it's noteworthy that this language is very similar to the language that Esav will receive from Yitzchak once Yitzchak understands what has happened, and he gives him a bracha as well. But the significant difference here is the reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaElokim. And the suggestion is made that this reflects the fact that there is this fundamental difference between Yaakov and Esav, that Yaakov recognizes that the brachos all represent this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this ongoing link. And it's the opposite, for example, of what Chazal tell us about the Nachash, that the Nachash in Gan Eden is given the curse that he should get his nutrition from the dirt, and the idea being that he never needs to turn to God because his food is always there. So even though he's never starving, but he's always cut off, he doesn't have an ongoing relationship. In contrast with the Jews, particularly in the Midbar, when they were given the man, so as the Gemara tells us, that represents the fact that because they needed it to be replenished every day, there's an ongoing recognition of the relationship with God, and that's a beautiful thing. So too here, the word Elohim is included in the bracha because Yaakov knows that everything that he has is because he has an ongoing relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the opposite of the attitude of the Nachash, and that itself is a source of bracha. And as the Vilna Gaon is saying, it's this bracha that is the source of all of the blessings the Jewish people will have throughout the generations. So indeed, this bracha is given by Yitzchak to Yaakov, at first under the impression that he's talking to Esav. And some of it has the connotation that he's going to have a control over the other nations, possibly, as some understand, because the first comments that Yitzchak thought he was talking to Esav, and he felt that there would be a need for material wealth to impress the other nations, or that this is something that Esav would appreciate and that would speak to his strengths. However, after he finishes giving this bracha to the one who is actually Yaakov, and Yaakov leaves, and Esav then comes. And now the truth comes out. Yitzchak realizes that he's given the bracha actually to Esav, and the Torah tells us that he's very taken aback. And the Yecharad Yitzchak Charada Gedola, that he has a tremendous fear, a tremendous anxiety. Rashi says that he feels Gehenim opening up beneath him, that he feels that there's a tremendous consequence of this. The Rashiv of Karaviavna of Goldwich noted that the Medrash has a perspective on this, that the Charada that Yaakov creates within Yitzchak with this whole maneuver here, the charada that Yitzchak feels is evocative of the charada that he had by the Akedah, and that there's a comparison drawn prompting the question of which was greater. And the Rashiv explained that they both involve a nisayun of one of the avos in their opposite quality, that here Avram was known for chesed, and the Akedah challenged him in the opposite direction, and he passed with flying colors. And Yaakov, his attribute is known to be emes, but he was forced to challenge that midah in order to do what was necessary. And he also came through with flying colors, and that is something that is tremendously impressive. That creates a reaction that is instilled within Yitzchak, and he recognizes that indeed that there is going to be an ongoing bracha because of this. And so he says, Gam Baruch Yeh, he will indeed be blessed. And that shows that even after he has been fooled, so to speak, he has to be maneuvered into the situation, he does recognize that the bracha should indeed stay with Yaakov. And this is something that Shmuel Barenbaum, the Amir Shiva, commented on, that Yitzchak agrees that Yaakov should have the bracha, because at first he perhaps thought that Esav was one who was more equipped to deal with the challenges of the world, but now he sees that Yaakov was also able to prepare a meal in a way that he had instructed Esav, in a way that he thought Esav was capable of alone, even though Rivka helped him. But he saw that there are qualities here that were similar in a positive sense to what Esav had, and that maybe Yitzchak had thought were necessary for dealing with the challenges of the future. So he recognizes that Yaakov is capable of handling both worlds, that he is not simply spiritual, and therefore indeed the brachos stay with him. And the next pasuk tells us that Esav has a tremendous reaction to this. He feels very devastated, and we're meant to connect to this. Pasuk tells us, Kishmoa Esav is divrei aviv vayitzak tzaka gedola mara ad ma'od. He is tremendously upset, and the Medrash tells us that this devastation that he feels is one that we pay for. So, for example, in Megillas Esther, in the beginning of the fourth parak, where it tells us that Mordechai cries, that is connected to the fact that Yaakov created this reaction within Esav. And this is something that Rav Barenbaum and others discuss as well, that this implied criticism of Esav, or perhaps some kind of a consequence of Yaakov, that there's some kind of a consequence that Yaakov and his descendants have to pay, is a little bit surprising if we assume that Yaakov did the right thing and that Rivka instructed him to do what was necessary. So why should there be a consequence? And he explains in a way that the Bali Musar have pointed out in general, that it's often the case that we have both together. And a more well-known example is the idea that Yaakov also will later pay a price for hiding Dina from Esav, because perhaps Dina could have had a positive influence on Esav, and yet it's surprising to criticize him for that, because clearly Dina had to be protected from Esav. And the Bali Musar explained that both can be true at the same time. It can be the right and necessary step, but if there is a negative consequence on someone, we also have to be able to recognize and to appreciate and to feel that loss. And that's something that has to be felt and to be imposed upon us if it's not felt. So just as Yaakov was later criticized for not appreciating the cost to Esav in missing out on the positive influence of Dina, so too here, there was a cost to Esav that came from what was necessary, that came from what had to happen, and there has to be an appreciation for that, and that's what this medrash is indicating. So here, Yitzchak responds to Esav when Esav asks what has happened, and he says, Achicha b'mirma, ba'achicha b'mirma. Your brother has come in a attitude of mirma. So what exactly does the word mirma mean? So that is challenging. It seems to be a word which has negative connotations on the surface. And indeed, there is a discussion about the nature of related words like harama, arama, which are used in different contexts and sometimes sound like they mean evasion or deception. And the topic of much analysis, and the Tosfos Yontif, in his commentary to Tmura, quotes the Rambam, where he says it all depends on how the word is formed, that arama is a technique that is perhaps roundabout, but is permissible, while a prohibited technique is called mirma. So to that, the Tosfos Yontif notes, even though he cites that interpretation in the name of the Rambam, he says it's difficult to say mirma is bad, because here we see that the actions of Yaakov are labeled mirma. So how could that be bad? So he suggests there must be a difference between the language of the Torah and the language of the Mishnah. And to say mirma is bad, that's only a Mishnaic language, but in the Torah, perhaps it's not necessarily bad. And indeed, if you look at Rashi, Rashi quotes the Medrash Rabbah, and Unklus as well renders this word as chachma, which maybe we could translate as cleverness, not necessarily judgmental, that there was a sharpness in what Yaakov did. It was clever, but it wasn't necessarily bad in and of itself. However, Ibn Ezra, in his interpretation here, he writes that it was sheker, that it was falsehood. So that understanding certainly seems much harsher. Rav Schwab, in his discussion of this whole episode, understands that that probably is the more likely interpretation, but not necessarily that it's negative, because it's appropriate in response to those who themselves act with sheker. But in the Sefer Haksava HaKabbalah, Rav Yaakov Zvi Mecklenburg, he gets very upset at the Ibn Ezra, and he says, how could it be that you could translate this word in a negative way? And he's upset that not only is it disparaging to Yaakov, it's a part of the whole struggle in the commentaries here to understand how to assess the actions of Yaakov, but he's also worried that it's disparaging to Yitzchak, because if Yitzchak is referring to his son this way, that would be an act of Lashon Hara. That would be inappropriate speech for him to talk that way about Yaakov. So he asserts in the Ksava HaKabbalah that it has to be, there's a different meaning here to the word mirma. And he has a lengthy analysis where he relates it to the idea of ram, of height, and the idea that sometimes there are certain actions that take place from a distance, which means we don't necessarily see the whole picture. So some part of it may be concealed, but not necessarily in a negative way, perhaps in a necessary way. And sometimes it's bad when it's concealed in a deceptive, harmful fashion. And sometimes it's simply what has to be in order to accomplish perhaps a positive goal. And here he suggests that it's the latter, that yes, it involves having to hold back something and bring something at a distance, but ultimately this is what was best for everyone. It was best for Yitzchak that the brachos be given to the son who could appreciate them. It was best for Esav because Esav himself didn't actually appreciate the brachos, as we see from the beginning of the parsha when he seems to disparage the whole notion of the Bechorah. So ultimately this strategy that Yaakov undertakes is actually better for everyone, even though there were aspects of it that had to be held back, that had to be at a distance for a time. And that's how he understands the usage of this word related to the idea Ram, coming from a height, coming from a distance. We don't necessarily see all of it at once, but ultimately it was a necessary and positive action in order to accomplish goals that were for the best of everyone. And to move a little further in the Aliyah, the idea that there is a noble motivation here and that it doesn't come from any animosity is reflected in the way Rivka has somewhat of a sympathetic portrayal talking about Esav's reaction. And even though she's saying that Esav at the moment wants to kill Yaakov, but she talks about him here now in Pasuk Mem Beis with very sympathetic language, and she identifies him as her son, or the Pasuk identifies Esav as her son, and she refers to Esav as Yaakov's brother. All of this sympathetic language to highlight the fact that he's still family and that this wasn't an act of animosity against him, but this is something that was necessary for the future of Klal Yisrael. And we find, as Rav Hirsch notes, that Yaakov leaves at this point penniless because this was not something he was doing for his personal profit. It was something that was necessary and that was motivated with noble intentions. And that's reflected both by the language and what happens. Just to note quickly, it's also interesting that in Pasuk Mem Vav, so Rivka tells Yitzchak that she doesn't want Yaakov to marry the women from around there. She says, "Katzti v'chayai mipnei benos ches," that I am disgusted because of these women, the benos ches. And this was invoked in a dispute between Rav Moshe Bick and the Satmar Rav. That Rav Moshe Bick was a great Talmud Chacham and had a suggestion that in order to prepare for marriage, it would be appropriate if there was a longer dating process, and that the girls should go out 8 times before agreeing to get married. And the Satmar Rav thought that that was a terrible pirtza, and he said, "Katzti v'chayai mipnei benos ches." I'm very upset, I'm very disgusted by these benos ches, by the women who go out 8 times. Benos ches, that's something that is a terrible pirtza. And Rav Moshe Bick responded to him. He said, "With all due respect, Rebbe," says, "you're a Masader Kedushin, I'm a Masader Gittin. I get to see what happens when there isn't enough care that is put into these decisions, and therefore I recognize that there has to be perhaps a longer process." So in any event, this is received, this message that he has to go away. And the pasuk tells us that Vayikra Yitzchak El Yaakov Vayivarechoso V'yisaveyu Vayomelo Losika Chisha Bnos Knan. So he gives him this message to go away, but he also gives him a bracha. So apparently he is now repeating the idea of a bracha, and that was always going to be the result, that Yaakov was going to receive brachos from Yitzchak. And there is a fascinating comment regarding this by Rav Yisachar Teichtal, the author eventually of the Sefer Eim HaBonim Smecha on Zionism, but he also wrote a Sfarim of Tshuvas called Mishnah Sacher, and more recently his thoughts al HaTorah were published under that title, Mishnah Sacher, and he experienced the Holocaust, and during that time he wrote that he reflected there was a moment where he was hiding on the roof, apparently from the Nazis, and he was watching the suffering and experiencing the suffering of the Jewish people during time of great oppression, and he was seeing that even the meager rations that were available for the Jewish people were being taken away by the Nazis. And he was thinking about the nature of the suffering of the Jews in general and at that moment, and he reflected on this pasuk and how this pasuk conveyed that it was always the plan that Yaakov would be blessed by Yitzchak, And yet, at the same time, there apparently was this need that it should be orchestrated, that he should also receive the bracha in the slot in which Esav had thought that he was going to get the bracha. And he suggests that the message here is that ultimately, yes, the Jews will prevail, but even during the darker times, when it seems like it's the time of Esav, when it seems like it's the moment in which he is going to be on top, even then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu works it out that the Jews receive brachos, that the Jews will be blessed and will be surviving even during those darker moments. And that was an important moment of inspiration to him then, as he was hiding on the roof and feeling all of the weight of oppression and persecution. He was reminded how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking out for Yaakov, even during the time when you would think that Esav is prevailing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is protecting the Jewish people, and so too will be throughout the generations, that even before the ultimate Geula, even during the moments of great darkness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is indeed continuing to look out for the Jewish people.